The following podcast contains adult language, explicit content, and original opinions.
All content is the opinion of Comics Brew and no one else.
It is meant for mature audiences only, so be warned.
I got some sad news.
You got the test results, and the doctor said that it is just one ball, not two weird ones?
Well, that and my car died this week.
It died?
Like, not like it won't start, like it just refuses. It's obstinate and being stubborn.
Is it like you lost the key?
No, it's had some fatal wounds.
Oh, it got that death wound?
It got that good kill.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
So that's tragic.
So here's the frame of reference. My front driver's side tire doesn't exist anymore.
Shattered into the ether?
A million rubber pieces. But also, my front driver's side axle went with it.
Oh, boy.
It's bent back
That's a bad kill.
So I was wondering. It's a righteous kill. It's a righteous kill.
Is that like a two to the chest, one to the head kind of equivalent on a car?
It's a hit. Someone put a hit out on my car. I'd like to, in memoriam, dedicate this episode, Comics Brew 251, to the 08 Chevrolet Impala that was. Red. Red.
Cheers and may it rest in peace.
Is.
Bow.
Comics Brew.
Episode 241.
251.
251. That's what I said in my head, not in my mouth. The backside of 250.
And that's a big hill to climb.
It is a big hill to climb.
So I had a question for you. Last week you said that 200, like this was the longest you've ever committed to anything.
Yeah.
I would argue that you've been on Facebook longer.
Yeah, but I'm not committed to doing that.
You're committed to
quip? You know the last time I put a new picture on Facebook?
When your sister and brother were at the ocean with you or some shit.
Yeah, it was two and a half years ago.
Yeah.
That was the last time I updated anything, even in my personal info, on Facebook.
Okay. My last profile picture that went up is when I got my Venom tattoo for the first time.
That might have been longer ago.
So 2008?
Oh, it was much longer ago.
My profile. I didn't want to make a profile until I had a good picture, so I got a Venom tattoo.
Oh, okay.
It's actually a little bit more complicated than that.
But I get the gist of it.
Yeah. Anyway, I have got a Fremont Brewing Dark Heron. I believe this was originally brewed for ECCC.
Oh,
okay. It's even got the logo down there at the bottom. So that's pretty cool. We talked about it last year when they first brewed it. But yeah, it's still a solid IPA. And then I've got the Elysian Kappa IPA. It's part of the Manic series. So yep. I think you should try this one, unless you have already.
No, I haven't. I don't think I have.
Do you remember Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles number 3?
Vaguely, is that Turtles in Time?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the Japanese people, when the turtles showed up, they were like, Kappa. You are Kappa.
Oh, yeah.
They're demons.
Yeah. It's the Kappa is a Japanese water demon, also a cryptozoological creature.
It is?
Kind of like a Bigfoot sort of thing.
No shit.
Yeah. And it comes out the water and gets you. Kappa, if you're looking it up.
Folklore. It means river child in Japanese. Also known as Kawataro, Kamahiki, and Kawatora.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, one of them means horse polar, and one of them means river tiger.
It just gets you out the river or out the water.
Get out that dark water!
Get out that dark water! So I got, I'm drinking this week. As usual, I picked a sweet logo. Which I actually was a good decision this week because it's a pretty good beer. It's from Big Sky Brewing Company out of Missoula, Montana. It's Space Goat Pale Ale. It's a nice, calm flavor.
Right on.
I don't know if that's the right word for it, but it's not too sharp.
Is it mellow?
It's mellow. It's mellow. There we go. Now, I mentioned this to you before the show. I noticed that, so the logo is a being in a spacesuit with the visor open, and it's a goat man.
Like a satyr astronaut?
You can't see his legs, so I don't know about that part of it, but basically, it's a goat head instead of a person head.
Gotcha. I missed a tumnus. Welcome to Nod.
On his shoulder, he has a patch that says, 3777, like a date.
Sure.
So I looked that up, and it was a symbol used by the Montana vigilantes in Virginia City, Montana. People who found the numbers 3777 painted on their tent or cabin knew that they had better leave the area or expect to be on the receiving end of vigilante justice.
Jesus Christ.
And supposedly, I actually want to look this up. Supposedly, the numbers are used on the shoulder patch of the Montana Highway Patrol. They claim to not know the original meaning of the symbol. But they do say, quote, or their website says that, quote, regardless of its meaning, however, 3777 is emblematic of the first organized law enforcement in Montana.
It's totally on their patches.
The Montana Highway Patrol,
yep,
in adopting this early symbol, honors the first men in the Montana Territory who organized for the safety and welfare of the people.
Are you on the Wikipedia site?
I'm on Wikipedia, yeah.
Yeah.
It also appears on the flight suits of pilots of the Montana Air National Guard, flight patch of the Montana Army National Guard Medevac Unit. There's a couple theories.
Uh-huh.
The numbers represent the dimensions of a grave.
3 by 7 by 77.
Yeah. That's my favorite of the three theories that Wikipedia puts forth.
I don't know. I like this. Frederick Allen in his book, A Decent Orderly Lynching, says the number meant that the person had to buy a $3 ticket on the next 7 a.m. stagecoach to take a 77-mile trip from Helena to Butte.
Oh, my God. So, interesting little... weird Montana folklore, which since this is from Missoula, it makes sense that they would pick that. But it's pretty decent beer, actually.
It's awesome. That's a nice little bit of trivia. I'm glad you like your beer too. That's a good choice.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a heavy, not a heavy news week, but it's a good news week.
There's some good stuff that happened.
I got some good news. you know what? The most interesting news I found this week, Tyler.
What?
Captain America wants to dance. He wants to tap dance.
Yeah, and this is, you know, he has said before that he was going to step away to direct.
Yeah, which he mentions.
He did do. I mean, he's still there, but now he has announced that basically Avengers 4 is the end for Chris Evans.
Chris Evans as Captain
and,
America.
And you mentioned tap dancing because he wants to. What's he doing right now, Josh?
So Chris Evans has a theory about tap dancing. He says, tap is waiting to have its day. And so right now he's angling towards a Broadway show. It's called Lobby Hero, and he's going to play the Kenneth Lonergan role starting next week, actually, at the Helen Hayes Theater in Broadway. He says that tapping allows him to feel like he's part of the music.
Get really into the physicality of the beats.
Absolutely. And the director for the play, his name's Trip Coleman. He said, I had this inkling that he may not have had the opportunity to show what he can really do as an actor. A lot of actors are afraid to play someone unlikable, but I think he really has like this egoless desire to serve the work. The play's director sent the script to Mr. Evans, betting that the potential to subvert his image as the goody two-shoes Captain America was too enticing to pass up.
That's actually a decent point.
Yeah, I fucking love how this is going. Like, Chris Evans is like supposedly, I think they Let's see. The nobility of Mr. Evans' character is so unimpeachable that entire plot lines turn on the ticks of his moral compass.
Yeah.
Mr. Evans describes himself as a taciturn man who is selfless and magnanimous. So that's what Captain America portrays, and now he's offered and now starring in this role where he's this like shitty cop, and I think it's a musical play.
I'd be down to see a Chris Evans in a musical.
Yeah. It's just so fucking funny. So he grew a mustache. Like, that's, he has a handlebar mustache like a cop does. He shaved his head like a flat top cop. It's just kind of dope.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a little sad that he will seem to be ending his Marvel run.
Yeah.
But, he's a damn good enough actor that, who would have fucking thought? Dude from Not Another Teen Movie.
Wearing a banana?
Yeah, like a couple years later, 10 years later, he'd be like, oh, God, he's the best Captain America ever.
Yeah,
I don't want him to leave.
Absolutely.
But, you know, he could be really fucking good in other stuff. If he wants to hit up Broadway and tap dance, more power
fucking
to him.
Fucking let him, right?
Yeah, more power to him. Have fun.
You go, Cap.
Just at least once, at the very end of one of your performances, do the... the show from the beginning of Cap One where he's on stage, the USO tours, tap dance that. Who raised
the flag for the fall of America?
Just at least once, like backstage, yeah, just a joke for the crew. And somebody films it, so I get to see it.
Yeah. I like this quote from him. He says, "When I think about the happiest times of my life, it's actually not on a movie set." Adding that he no longer wishes to make more than one film a year. He says, "I've stopped thinking about my trajectory or my oeuvre, or whatever pretentious word you want to use. I'm just following whatever I feel like doing for now. And I'm creatively hungry for what I'm doing now."
Oh, that's good.
I think I'm down with this, Cap. Go for it, man.
Mm-hmm. But either way, we're very excited to see him in a month or so.
Less than a month.
Less than a month at this point with Infinity War, and then a year later with
whatever the other Avengers one is. 4, yeah, absolutely.
Which supposedly, recently there was an article that from one of the screenwriters of Avengers 4 that he was basically saying, "You guys have no idea what it is. You know what Infinity War is because we've been building up Thanos in the background, and as a combo character, you know who he is and what he's about. You basically know like what 3 is about, but 4 is such a big shift, yeah. I guess, that part of the reason that they stopped it from being Infinity War Part 1 and Part 2 was because it felt, they didn't say this word, but the impression I got was it felt disingenuous to them to make a movie and call it Part 1 and 2 when the cutoff from one to the other shifted to a completely different movie.
I don't doubt it.
Yeah, it was apparently it wasn't like 3 ends, 4 begins and finishes that story. It's like 3 is a story on its own and 4 is a different story.
Nice.
And total shift.
So, you know, okay, I have to ask, do you like Age of Ultron?
I do, actually.
I think Age of Ultron is a fantastic film, right? It rises and falls off of James Spader.
Oh, like, yeah, no, he's amazing.
He's the only thing that keeps that thing interesting the whole time?
No, I wouldn't say the only thing, but he is definitely one of the driving, like, motivators for me to love that movie.
What other plot in the movie do you think is good?
Hawkeye.
Oh, yeah, that left turn was pretty good.
Hawkeye's shit's really good.
Especially because Whedon, like, builds it up. Hawkeye's gonna die, and it's something else entirely. Yeah.
And I like the twins, even though they're really tied in with Ultron. Mm-hmm. So it kind of counts along with Ultron's story. And then there's a little bit of...
Hulk and...
I wasn't even going to say that. The conflict between Tony and Cap.
Oh, yeah, it builds, right? It starts right there.
It starts there, and it goes throughout the movie. And it doesn't... It kind of explodes at one point.
Yeah,
but it doesn't really kick off.
It explodes when Vision comes to life.
Yeah,
right at there. Yeah. I totally agree. And it, like you can see the start of it when he rips that log in half.
Oh yeah, that was good.
So dope. And then like when Stark leaves, he's like, "Don't take from my pile."
Yeah.
But yeah, I really think that Age of Ultron gets bagged on for it's not complex. There's not a lot of character buildup. It's just a popcorn movie.
It's a different movie than 1, for sure.
It is. It doesn't have the same, I don't know, feel as 1.
Oh, yeah.
But I love it, and I can't wait to see what happens when we have, like, because we've seen what the Russos can do with an ensemble.
Oh,
and
yeah.
That's the Avengers movies at a core, right?
Yo, they're big ensemble cast. This is the biggest ensemble. As a recent internet meme going around, that this is the most ambitious crossover event in history.
Uh-huh, yep.
And it really is, I think, the... Like, there's never been something like this with 10 years of movies behind it.
Yeah, and, like, you could talk about Hollywood royalty, like, it's not anywhere near, like, what it was in the 40s or what it was in the 50s, like, with Sinatra and like, Elvis being in movies and stuff. It wasn't the classics of John Wayne and the spaghetti westerns and stuff like that.
People
call
that,
like, the golden age of you know, movies, right? There's never been a better time to be a moviegoer.
Yeah, there's a lot of good shit out nowadays.
And people are getting braver and braver, you know? Like... With Logan and with Deadpool. Speaking of Deadpool, let's talk about the new trailer with Deadpool.
The new trailer is rad as shit.
I fucking love Domino in this trailer. I think she's awesome.
She only said, what, the 2 lines in it?
I don't care.
It was
she's
good.
She's awesome.
You know, the one thing I'll note is that they didn't really spoil like almost any plot.
Except that I think Cable's a bad guy.
Do you know the generic plot, like why he's back from time?
I don't, but I do know that like... Cable's always portrayed as a bad guy to the people that he's coming towards.
Yeah. Well, okay, do you ever read through the big crossover almost 10 years ago now where Hope was from?
Oh, Second Coming?
Yeah, it was Messiah Complex, and then Messiah Wars. Something, Messiah Wars, and then Second Coming.
Yeah.
The whole
that
idea.
That all took place during the Dark Utopia, the Dark Avengers stuff, least, too.
Yeah, somewhere through there. They get across through the
it
end
does.
Of it. But
yeah, because Utopia either way,
it was that era. The whole idea was that Cable comes from a future where Hope, like, basically saved a million human lives.
Yep.
And ushered in this new era for mutants.
And mutant peace, and she is the Messiah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Forge comes from a future where she killed a million humans.
Forge or Bishop?
Bishop. Sorry, I said Forge. You're right. It was Bishop. Bishop comes from that future, and that's why he wants to kill her.
Yeah, you see that in Decimation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The reason Cable's coming back is because he's from, in this one, he's from a future that's bad for mutants, and because there is a kid who grows up to be this crazy mutant villain that starts a bunch of shit.
I did not know
and
that.
And he's come back to kill him. And that's why he is portrayed as the villain.
Uh-huh.
And that's, you know, kind of, shit spirals out from there. But that's just why Cable's back.
You know what my favorite shot in the trailer was?
What?
Deadpool hugging Colossus and grabbing his ass.
Yeah. Just reaches down. I mean, you know they're going to make a big thing. He's going to hug him and then just have his hands on his back, and then one's going to reach down.
Exactly. And then go, tongue.
Or he's not. Or he's going to go straight for it.
Yeah.
It's going to be drawn out or immediate.
Yeah. He's also, like, tooling around in Professor X's fucking wheelchair.
Yeah, it looks like Deadpool 1, which I'm very stoked about.
Mm-hmm. Vanessa's back.
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
Marina Baccarin is also... She's beautiful, but she's also a pretty good actress. She's fantastic.
She's a great actress.
Did you see V? The remake of V?
Oh, the TV show?
Yeah.
No, I never did.
So she totally desexualizes herself. She cuts off all her hair. Very much like business. Like Carrie Ann Moss in Jessica Jones.
Okay.
Very just straight business. Like, only sexualized when she wants to be, right?
Yeah.
And, like, she acts the hell out of those scenes, man.
I heard that was a decent show. I think that was where Elizabeth Mitchell was, too.
The first Supergirl?
No, Elizabeth Mitchell from Lost.
Oh, yeah, nope, no idea.
Blonde woman. I want to say she was in V. Right after Lost, she was in something that I think was V, but maybe not. I can't remember at this point.
So are you excited about Deadpool? It comes out like weeks after Infinity War?
Yeah, I'll probably still be riding that high when I watch Deadpool, but it'll hit a different fix for me.
For sure.
It'll be a cool movie, but it's just a totally different movie. But I'm stoked either way. The second trailer, it was really the first trailer.
It is.
There was a teaser. It was really, you know,
but there was
a big
two.
Joke.
There's been two, right? I think there's been two.
I thought
two
there was
before
just
this.
The one. Has there been two?
Yeah, I think so. Because the one with the CGI was the second one. I think it was teaser, trailer one, and this is trailer two.
Huh. Well, either way, this was a good one. It got me stoked for it. I want to see where... I mean, Terry Crews showed up in it.
Sure did.
I kind of didn't even... I don't know how I didn't realize Terry Crews was in it. He's probably in it for a half second, but we'll see.
So we had a question about... we had a question last week about Solo, like where Solo the movie would take place.
Oh, yeah?
And one of our listeners said, Solo will take place after the prequel movies, so R2 and 3PO are with Bail Organa. So remember how we were talking about...
It's a possibility. It's
a possibility that he'll show up, that they'll show up, but I don't know, man.
I don't think they will, but I hope they will be shown for a split second. Like he's in a spaceport, and Bail Organa walks, like, his crew walks onto the ship, and they're
Come
in, like,
on,
the
R2.
Lower left of the screen for 2 seconds.
Yeah. There they are!
just to keep the tradition alive. But yeah, I'm not surprised about that timeline. That makes perfect sense. I couldn't see anywhere else the movies could be.
Yeah. It'd have to be before New Hope.
Oh, yeah. Like many, many years before New Hope.
Mm-hmm. So, you know what really makes me laugh?
What?
Henry Cavill.
Oh.
Do you know what really makes me laugh about Henry Cavill?
Henry Cavill's recently deceased mustache.
Absolutely. Sacrificed the king stash.
Finally.
Yeah, so
God damn.
Earlier this week over Facebook, Henry Cavill released a video that he just basically was talking to himself in the mirror, but also talking to the camera and saying, "It's time, ladies and gentlemen. That mustache is coming off." And then they do like a clip show of his mustache and where he's been, like, around the world
yep.
with the mustache. And then they start showing clips of Justice League. And he doesn't
have... Yeah, it was this big thing, like, you've seen Justice League if you don't know what we're talking about. If you have not seen Justice League, you know...
That's okay.
It's okay. Good for you. You'll probably find not. But if you have, you'll notice that there are times... Basically, every time Henry Cavill as Superman is on screen, where he looks a little off.
Like, his face is, like, a little...
Yeah, just, like, there's something weird about it.
It's a little too perfect, to be honest.
Yeah, and what that is, especially in the very first time you see him...
When he's in Kansas.
Yeah, like, the very first time you see him, it's very noticeable there.
Oh, wait, I think the first time you see him is actually at the statue.
The statue, yeah, no, that's what I'm thinking, the statue, where he grimaces.
Yeah.
He had a mustache, and it was CGI'd out.
Yep.
Which is a totally baffling decision, which we'll get to later. But it's CGI'd out, and that's what he's poking fun at in this video, is he's finally shaving it. He had it on for Mission Impossible 6, maybe something else too.
And even Deadpool makes fun of it in the trailer. The one where Cable's got the green arm. He's like, it's not going to take that long. It's not like we're getting rid of a mustache.
Yep. I did like that. That was pretty good. I love how Henry Cavill can poke fun at himself. I mean, that dude's such a big fucking nerd.
I love him, man.
He got the call that he was Superman while he's doing a WoW raid.
Yep.
It's like, dude, he can poke fun at himself. It's great.
Yeah, like, I love, like, just like we were talking about Chris Evans separating himself from the role of Captain America, I love the ability for an actor to just be like, nah, it's just a job. It's fine.
Yeah. It might be a dream job, but hey, it's just a job at the end of the day.
Like, the best example of that, I think, is the difference between Jared Leto and Will Smith on the set of Suicide Squad. Jared Leto did the whole method acting thing.
Oh, that guy got way too into it.
Way crazy, right? Started giving gifts to the cast. He gave a severed pig's head to Will Smith. Will Smith gave it back. He's like, yo, it's just acting.
Yep.
It's just, bro.
Will Smith is probably one of my favorite actors, because that dude is about as real as you can get.
He's also the same person in every one of his movies. I don't think that guy's got a range. Well, except for like 7 pounds or Pursuit of Happiness.
Yeah, he can go darker.
But if you look at all of his popcorn.
But he prefers to not, is the thing. That's why I like him, is because I've seen movies where he has a range, but he just chooses movies where he gets to just basically be a like a regular ass dude.
Or an Adam.
A little bit different, left or right, you know, from his normal personality. A little swerve there, but he's basically just a guy.
In the parlance of our missing host, sometimes he gets to go ham.
Yeah, he just sometimes goes ham, sometimes he doesn't.
Yeah. I love Henry Cavill, though. He's great.
You guys got to watch this video because it's actually pretty good.
Yeah, I'll link it on the site. Last thing I got is that the Brewers Association has added a new classification of beer to their world of judging.
Yeah, this was a little weird and specific.
Well, the reason it's so weird and specific is because we literally had some of these last week.
They did it because of us?
No, but like it was just coincidence that we had juicier hazy IPAs last week with Lisa and Mark.
So they've added juicy or hazy pale ale as a classification.
Yep. They've even listed some of the characteristics in that classification.
Well, they have to classify it. So, hold on. Do you have the list of what
I
the...
I do.
Okay. Yeah,
so the color is straw to deep gold. Clarity is low to a very high degree of cloudiness. Starch, yeast, hop, protein, and or other compounds contribute to a wide range of haziness within the category. The perceived malt aroma and flavor is low to medium malt aroma and flavor may be present, but the perceived hop aroma and flavor is medium high to very high hop aroma and flavor present, with attributes typical of hops from any origin. The perceived bitterness is actually medium low to low. Fermentation characteristics are low to medium fruity estery aroma, and flavor may be present, but are usually overwhelmed by hop fruitiness. Body is medium low to medium high, perceived as silky but full on the mouth, and contribute to an overall better flavor profile. An additional notes that the Brewers Association added is grist may include a small amount of oat, wheat, or other adjuncts to promote haziness. Descriptors such as juicy are often used to describe the taste and aroma hop-derived attributes in the beer.
So how often do how often does the Brewers Association classify a new kind of beer?
That's a good question. I could not tell you the answer to
because
that question.
Because I know IPAs are, I mean, I don't like them.
I know.
But a lot of people do, and especially in Western Washington, it is like the big thing.
Mm-hmm.
It has been for fucking years. Like, 10 years at this point. So it seems a little surprising to me that at this point, this far in, when they've been this popular, there would be a new kind of one. Or maybe it's not surprising at all. Like, maybe somebody finally realized, like, okay, we gotta not do the same shit over and over.
So
let's make the same style, put a twist on it.
I'd actually okay, so that's from the brewer's side, but from the classification side, I would put it more towards, like, the American psychology papers or whatever, where they decide
to start... The DSM-4 or 5? Now they're on 5.
Yeah, that, the DSM. So I think that's the thing, because also this week there were announced a bunch of new Brewers Association style guidelines on contemporary American Pilsner, classic Australian Pale Ale, Goza and contemporary Goza, New England IPA. So, like, new classifications seem to be coming out all the time, so... Maybe, like, although those are all addendums to existing classifications, I imagine they happen pretty regularly.
Yeah. Well, that kind of makes sense if they occasionally boost that up, like, you know, have a new classification.
Yeah.
Well, then, here you go. This happens to be the new one for that. Timely, because, like you said, we did have one recently.
It's also, like, the Comet one that I've had recently, or I think the ones I'm referring to specifically are the fruity ones we had last week.
Yeah. Think you are correct there.
Any other news you want? Like, that's all I really got.
I've been trying to think,
because
really the biggest things I've been hooked on is fucking Deadpool trailer came out.
That and, like,
well, I mean, Krypton premiered, and I have very specifically not looked at anything about it because
I
want
to watch it.
No, I'm affronted by the whole idea it exists.
Oh, we should just watch it for fun.
No, I'm never gonna watch that show. See, I can't really vote with my dollars here because I don't actually have a television subscription that will allow me to watch it.
Exactly, me too.
So it's not like I'm voting where I have the choice,
actually,
I don't.
If you neglect to go to the sci-fi streaming service, then there you go.
Oh, I've neglected to do so. I just think that... Okay, so a lot of people have had that come up with the point that we're hitting, like, a superhero movie saturation of the market. There's a lot of them.
Oh, yeah.
So far, I don't have a problem with it because... They've all been, you know,
make hay while the majority, right?
I think honestly, if you look at the major superhero movies that come out in the last 10 years, they've hit more often than non-superhero movies have.
Maybe.
No, and I'm talking like
across the board, right?
Across the board, all companies look at good versus bad. I think they hit more often than at least critically. And
we talking just capes or comic book movies all the way?
I was thinking cape movies, but I would have
because
to look.
Because then you add Kingsman to that, and that's a two.
Yeah,
right
I would
there.
Have to look at all the...
Kick-Ass 1 and 2?
I would have to, like, actually break it down to make a thing, but I'm thinking comics. I think they hit more often than the rest of Hollywood does. But I still see there is a big saturation of it.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm kind of hoping that after Avengers 4, they're going to shoot a bunch of... Different direction, do a lot of different weird shit.
Yeah, because but, that's kind of needed, right? Like, to keep the genre, I don't know, fresh.
But kind of where I understand that point is when we get things like Krypton. Like, what is Krypton about? Krypton is about not Superman's dad. It's not about Superman's dad. It's about Superman's granddad. Like, you are digging so far into something that does... It has no draw.
Yeah.
The biggest draw for this is that Adam Strange is a part of it.
No shit?
Yeah, Adam Strange is a character.
See,
Which, on the other hand, bastardizes Adam Strange.
It does.
Yeah, like, it takes...
Because it takes away from Ran and Thanagar.
Yeah, it takes away the whole part of Adam Strange.
Yeah.
It removes a big part of it. Like, he's cool with other characters. He's got this whole unique thing about him. And suddenly that no longer exists in this world. It's just a guy that somehow goes to Krypton.
Yeah. Well, it's a Zeta Beam thing.
Yeah, well, yeah, but you know what I mean.
Like, I do. It just happens.
It's just a dude. He has nothing else around him. And the specialness of it, of Adam Strange and going to Ran Thanagar, was Adam Strange. And now it's Krypton. Oh, shit, Adam Strange is here, too. Check it out, guys.
Isn't that cool? Isn't that neat?
Yeah, like, this is where I'm really starting to see the saturation of it. It's just too much. Like, this didn't need to exist. I am super surprised. This went through a pitch... Pre-production.
Pilot.
Casting.
Yeah.
pre-production, script writing, casting, filming the pilot, submitting it, and getting an order. Like, and in no part of that did somebody go, really, dudes, no. Like, this doesn't need to happen.
What about,
this is a waste.
I mean, that happens across the board, though. Like, there's that, yeah. There's that show Tomorrow People. What, do you remember Robbie Amell from Flash? He was the original Firestorm?
Yeah.
Right? Okay, so the whole thing with that was he ended up splitting from the show because he got, like, a lucrative movie contract, right?
And that didn't happen.
It fell through, so that means he had to revert back to TV. Well, they couldn't. They've already written him off in The Flash, right?
Yeah.
And they couldn't add him to, Legends of Tomorrow, because that's now where fucking Firestorm is.
Yeah.
So he's in this show called Tomorrow People with people with extraordinary powers, and he's one of them.
Same
and
shit.
And it's a CW, dude. It's a CW show through and through. it's just terrible. There was one more news story we need to hit on, and I think it's something that we overlooked, and it happened actually from day of recording live 8 days ago.
Oh, so it's last week.
Yeah, but it happened after we had recorded, because you remember last week was the first time we ever not recorded on a Monday.
Yep.
So it happened after that. Justice League will relaunch with Scott Snyder, Jim Chung, and Phil Jimenez.
Oh, shit, that's right. Yeah,
DC took Jim Chung from...
Yeah, we talked about this a little bit because there was some preview art.
Yeah.
With Jimmy Chung. And, yeah, dude, this is about
DC
to be...
DC took Jim Chung, man.
It's about to be a rad team. I like Phil Jimenez. I like Scott Snyder. I think... here's my prediction. They're going to have Jimmy Chung for...
Two, three issues, four issues.
Oh
maybe?
Yeah. No, like he's gonna start the first one.
Uh-huh.
If anything, so they've already put Phil Jimenez on the book, so I think it's about to be 50-50 art, and he's gonna stay that course for two or three issues, and then it's gonna get less and less until he's only doing covers.
Mm-hmm. And then Phil Jimenez will take over
for the first two arcs, and after that he's gone. Yep. Is my prediction, but either way, it's a good get. Yeah. Is definitely a good get.
So there's this cover right now from Jim Chung. It is just fantastic. It's got, so here's our roster: Superman, Batman, Martian Manhunter, Wonder Woman, Hot Girl, Flash, and John fucking Stewart, Green Lantern.
That's the JLU.
This is
lineup.
The JLU, brother.
Like this, they have gone. I mean, it's been a long time since they've had a classic lineup.
Yep.
And really, like the biggest...
New 52. New 52 is when they changed that.
So, okay, wait. Say that lineup to me again.
Superman, Batman, Manhunter, Wonder Woman, Hot Girl, Flash, and Jon Stewart. That is Bruce Timm's Justice
Hot
League.
Hot Girl, you didn't say Aquaman in there.
He's not.
Yeah,
and
so
Aquaman wasn't in
Hot Girl is the only one of those that isn't like what we really consider the classic JLU.
Oh, sure,
JL7.
Yeah, gotcha.
And even still, that's a JLU member. Like, that is a classic, but in a different sense.
Yep.
It's been, I would think, 10 years since DC has put out a Justice League comic book lineup that is this classic.
Yeah, I'd probably agree with that.
They
10 years ago was Blackest Night. So maybe in there, but even that was an expanded roster.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, there's been a lot of, like, either really, it's a really big roster with a lot of weird characters, or they pare it down to, you know, seven or eight people, but there's weird members.
Yeah.
You'll have the core of, you know, Superman, Wonder Woman, Batman, but then a Flash, maybe? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like Wally.
And, like, some weird people, or Cyborg is there.
Zatanna's
like,
on the team.
Yeah, like that kind of thing. Yeah. This classic roster hasn't been for a really long time. The closest was when the New 52 launched and they switched Cyborg for Martian Manhunter.
Yep, I agree.
And even then, I think that is less classic than putting Hot Girl, because that was more of an effort to bring Cyborg to the forefront, where he's always been a Titan.
Yeah.
Where Hot Girl was never, like, on another team.
She was just with Hawkman.
Yeah, she was just with Hawkman or a member of the
Justice League. Yeah, absolutely.
Like, a long time in the...
Like founding
Bruce
member.
Timm cartoons member of Justice League. I mean, she has earned her wings as a classic classic JL character. So I think this lineup is, this roster is fantastic.
Yeah.
I love it.
The announcement came, I mean, like I said, a long time ago, but we didn't really get a chance to talk about it.
Yeah.
But let's see. Jim Chung said, I'm extremely honored and happy to be able to launch Justice League with people like Scott and George Jimenez. It has been many years since I've had the pleasure of working at DC, but when Scott first mentioned this opportunity, I knew I couldn't say no. The man's energy and excitement has been infectious, and I can't wait to share what we have in store. I can't think of a more perfect book to return to DC on. These characters are ones that I grew up loving, and the prospect of being able to leave my mark on them leaves me thrilled. So, I don't know if you guys out there know what Jim Chung is, but he's a Marvel guy for a while now.
Oh, yeah. He's been doing Marvel for a long time.
Like, we're talking,
time.
Like, almost 2 decades, right? So, for him to, like you said,
if
for
I
him
remember
to come
correctly,
back,
he drew House of M, didn't he?
I think so.
Or no, was that Olivier? No, that was Olivier Coipel.
Yeah.
Yeah. He did. Then what did he do right before that? He was doing another series before that.
So, let's see. Marvel's interiors, he's got Avengers Finality, Children's Crusade, Civil War II on the Free Comic Book Day side, Iron Man for one issue, New Avengers, Marvel Comics Presents, a lot of X-Force.
He does a lot of one-off kind of things,
yeah,
or miniseries. I can't think of the last time he was doing regular art, but he does a lot of covers too.
Mm-hmm.
He's a fantastic artist. He's one of those guys that you would recognize him. He does have a little bit of the John Romita Jr. same face thing going on. A
little bit.
But it's not like a bad thing, really, because he's such a damn good artist. You still know who you're looking at. But he's definitely got a unique style.
He did New Avengers Illuminati.
Oh, yep. That was one of his bigger ones.
Miniseries.
Yep,
yeah.
That was one of the good ones.
Yep.
No, he's fantastic. I'm super excited that he's, at the very least, part of an ongoing. We'll see how long that goes.
Yeah, absolutely. So that was the last piece of news I had.
Yeah, I didn't really have anything else because everything you popped up there was the shit I saw this week.
Oh, I saw there's a nice fan art of it's called The Last Shawarma, but it's the Last Supper with all the Avengers. I'll have to share that with you later.
Yeah, you gotta show that to me later.
Stan Lee is in the background, by the way.
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course he is.
That's it. That's all I got.
Well, then it's time for some quick reviews.
Why don't you do your review?
I'm gonna go first because...
Yeah, that's what I just said.
I'm going to do it.
Okay.
I got Star Wars, issue 45, by Kieran Gillen and Salvador LaRocca. I like to check in on this. Well, I check in on every issue. I read all of them. But every now and then I like to check in and review it because occasionally they have what I think is a really good example of why I actually really like this series. Because this whole series takes place between A New Hope and Empire Strikes Back. And there's a 3-year gap there. And if you think about it, the end of A New Hope, well, even in A New Hope, Luke's just his fucking farm boy. I mean, at the end of it, he blows up the Death Star.
Mm-hmm. But he's like a natural talent.
But I mean, really, in terms of the Rebel Alliance, he's just some dude, mm-hmm, until he blows up the Death Star. And then the next time you see him in Empire Strikes Back, he's General Luke.
Yeah, he's General... I think he's actually Commander Skywalker.
Okay, you might be right. He's Commander Skywalker.
Yeah.
Or General or Commander. Like, he's high-ranking.
Yeah.
And people respect him. He has people under him. Like, he is... He goes from...
He's the leader of Rogue Squadron, actually.
Yeah, way we see his growth in the movies is Rando do the blows up the Death Star, and then 3 years later, he is a major fixture in the Rebellion.
Mm-hmm.
So this comic is an opportunity to see a lot of that growth. And they make full effect of it. Now, this is part of the reason I like it is this is a much calmer issue than normal. There's been
it's
lot...
It's like an interstitial issue?
Yeah.
There's
one action scene in this issue, and it's a page long.
Nice. So it reminds me of, like, those episodes of Clone Wars where they'd, like, do a droid episode.
Yeah.
Except
it's way better than that, because I hated those episodes.
For sure.
I hated those. The whole thing about this is the Rebel Alliance doesn't have a fleet right now. Like, they have... They in A New Hope, they had, you know, a quote-unquote fleet. Like, the people, what these different senators can afford
cobble
to
together,
spare.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the Mon Calamaris don't join the fleet until Return of the Jedi. Just before that.
They're in A New Hope.
They are?
They are.
I never saw them.
The big-ass cruisers are Mon Calamari cruisers.
Yeah, but you don't see them until Empire Strikes Back.
That's what I mean. You said Return of the Jedi.
I did, didn't I?
Yeah. You don't see them until Empire Strikes Back because they aren't until then. And actually, that is a big part of this. That is a major part of this, is that the Mon Calamari are under Imperial rule.
Uh-huh.
And they have a regent who wants to help them, but he can't do it because he's such under imperial rule, and the Mon Calamari will not break with their ruler.
Sure.
They just won't risk it. So Leia has a plan.
Too much for the people. I can't be, like, I can do dry, I can't do wet.
Yeah, because it's weird.
Yeah.
No, a thing that's been going on is there's this princess from a place called Shu Turun.
Uh-huh.
She is the princess of this planet that's basically full of miners.
Vader brought down some shit on these people.
Yeah, Vader came down hard and killed the king or some shit.
Quelled a rebellion.
Quelled this whole rebellion and raised her up.
Yep.
And she's been working with him.
Like
and
a puppet. Yeah.
Yeah, like as a... She's not quite a puppet in that she actually is their ruler, but she's, you know, she was given the spot by
Vader, yeah.
By Vader, by the Imperials.
Yeah, I remember him quelling that uprising. That was a brutal fucking series of issues.
She's been in the background, and the last issue, they brought, the last arc, the Shu Turun government brought this gigantic machine to come mine the remains of Jedha.
Oh.
And
nice. Code for kyber crystals, huh?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And in that sequence of shit that happens, Leia meets this princess. And it meets her in a way where, like, they're alone.
Uh-huh.
And this princess basically is like, hey, I'm on your fucking side. Like, I can't... The gist of it is she tells her...
Get me the fuck out
of
here.
This is a short conversation because people are on the goddamn way.
Yeah.
But I am with you, and here's how I will help you.
Yeah, exactly.
And so... This issue is it's a lot of two different things. It's a lot of Leia being at a meeting of the council where their discussion is, okay, we've had some victories, but we don't have a fleet. We can't do this. Well, the Mon Calamari have a fleet, and the Mon Calamari have resources. But what can we do with this? Like, they're not going to really help us. Leia brings up, well, I have somebody on the inside who has gotten us quality materials. They already are getting shipments from this princess, and she has learned from her where the Mon Calamari king is being held captive.
Oh yeah, liberate him
and he will get the Mon Calamari on board
side. Yeah,
and there's a lot, I mean, the back and forth between Leia and the generals is fantastic because it's there. Okay, there's a spot here that's fantastic. It's a gosh, I wish I could remember this commander's name. He's a commander from...
Is he in the movies?
He's in the movies.
Riken?
It might be Riken.
It Madine?
Oh, shit. It might be Nadine. I don't remember. I mean, this guy... He's in Rogue One.
Oh, okay. No, he's the... Is he the intelligence guy?
No, he's the one who... basically, he's the one who tells the guys to just fire on Galen Erso.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Yeah,
he's the intelligence guy.
Yeah, he's the one who's basically like, just kill him.
He's the one who gives, Andrian, Cadrian, whatever his name is? Andor.
Cassian Andor.
Cassian Andor, yeah. He's the one who's like, that's not the mission. The mission is kill Galen Erso.
Yeah, it's that guy.
Yeah.
He and Leia are having it out, and she blows out her, she, like, tells him her plan. Like, hey, okay, we can go get him. She basically just says, she doesn't tell the plan yet, she says, we can get the king. I know where he is. Mm-hmm. And exactly where he is. We can get him and get him back to Mon Calamari.
We got this.
We can do this. And he's talking it out. Leia says they provided a location and a set of ultra security codes. We just need a biosignature. Commander says, that's a big just. Every one of these bases only give access to parties featuring a handful of individuals. You would need, and then it like dashes out. And the next panel is the text is slightly smaller and he's just looking at her. You're going to kidnap the Imperial Moth of the Calamari Sector. Like, he realizes it midway through.
That's ballsy.
So then she kind of lays out, you know, what's going to go on there. But then the other half of the issue is Luke just being in a bar. And he's meeting up with Wedge, you know, because they haven't seen each other in a while.
Since Death Star, probably. He
went there with Han. But he meets Wedge. Like, Wedge shows up. And it's really just him talking to pilots.
Right.
And why I brought up that you get to see the growth is you get to see pilots coming up to him being like, I just want to say I'm honored to work with you. And he's like, dude, anybody would have taken that shot. And the guy says, yeah, but you're the one that did it.
Yeah, yeah. I like to think, like, Luke walks in, sees Wedge, he's like, hey, bring it in.
That's almost exactly what happens. It's a fantastic issue because we get a whole lot of Luke just on his downtime and how he reacts to the idea that they're, like, you know, after what he's done, there are now people that look up to him.
Yeah.
He's coming into that role. There's a lot of Leia where you see, like, why she's so respected as, you know, a leader of the rebellion.
And, like, not only royalty with how she composes herself, but general in how she executes stuff.
Exactly. Like, yeah. She has plans. And then this book ends with the very beginnings of this plan. They don't get to actually, you know, helping save the king, but okay, they got to think. The idea is they have to kidnap a moth and get him to, you know, use his fingerprints or whatever to get in to get this king. Well, there's a part before that. Well, how are they going to get the moth out? And sure. Nobody, because you do that, you kidnap him. 10 minutes later, everybody knows, and his clearance is revoked.
Yeah.
That's the way that happens. And they have a workaround that is fantastic. there's a scene in this that I will say I should have seen this coming, but seeing the panel, I just went, oh, fuck! Like, I thought they threw some crazy twist at me, but really quickly, you see it's not exactly what it seems. But it is a fantastic issue because it's one of those Star Wars issues that's it's kind of a bit of downtime to see a lot of the growth of characters, while also, at the very end, it kicks off what seems like another fantastic arc of the series. Mm-hmm. So yeah. I was down with it. I just really wanted to check back in with that book.
Speaking of checking back in, I'd like to check back in with Batman Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Volume 2.
Yep.
We're on issue 5 this time, written by James Tynion IV and Ryan Ferrier, with art by Freddie Williams II and colors by Jeremy Caldwell. So I think I introduced the first issue of this. Donatello got his ass handed to him by a splinter segment of the Foot Clan. And so looking for guidance, he hopped back over to talk to Batman in Gotham City. Hey, I know that you and I are pretty much equals on levels of smarts. How do you reconcile the fact that you're also a badass ninja and I want to be that? Well, in doing so, like in Turtles in Time, Donatello switched places with Bane. And Bane is now in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles New York. That happened. And then 4 issues later, Bane controls New York. Bane absolutely just controls New York. What he's done in the meantime is become the leader of the Foot Clan, by beating the shit out of them, convince Bebop and Rocksteady to be his lieutenants. He has hijacked Professor Stockman, and the mutagen that created the turtles has been added to the venom formula to make a new, stronger venom. Bane has now taken seat at the head of the Statue of Liberty in New York, dropped a Bane luchador mask over the Statue of Liberty's face.
Of course, he has.
Broadcast in this issue, broadcast to the city of New York that he is now ready to free them from their prison by flooding the streets of New York with venom.
No boy.
So that's the bad guy story arc. The good guy story arc is a little bit more complicated. So Donatello's having this like crisis of conscience. He's like, I'm useful to my brothers as a tech guy, but when it comes to the fights that we get in on a regular basis, I kind of suck. So
at least he could recognize it.
So he does, right? But then like Raphael starts throwing the guilt shade at him and stuff. And then Donnie takes it a little seriously, and then when they do confront Bane back in New York after Donatello's like, shit, it's my fault this happened, Bane basically tears him a new asshole, you know, character-wise, and says, like, you don't even belong in the same group as your brothers. Like, you're not even a part of this family, really.
What a jerk.
Well, like, Splinter does his best to convince Raphael that that's not the case. Or, sorry, Donatello that's not the case. Donnie ends up grabbing a sample of the new Venom. And I just want to show you this right here, Tyler. It's Donatello Baned out. Yeah, yeah. He's so dope. Like, he's, like, easily, like, 10 feet tall. Like, there's a moment where he comes back into the sewer, and he's going to, like, squeeze his way through the door, and his brothers are like, damn, what did you do? Yeah.
Got swole.
Uh-huh. This issue 5, is pretty much Leonardo and Batman trying to calm Donatello Baned out down in order to help them synthesize a way to stop Bane's control of the city by flooding the streets with venom. The B story in this is that Splinter got his ass handed to him by Bane, so Raphael and Damian teleport back to Gotham City, find a Lazarus pit, and drop Splinter in.
Get him all healed up.
Get him all healed up, but when he comes out, he's like raging, right? He's even like hissing and shit.
That's the whole thing about him.
The Lazarus Pit drives you mad. The Lazarus Pit's making him
crazy as fuck.
Yeah, until like what, you can recover eventually? Like you eventually recover your humanity?
Yeah, you're crazy for like 20 minutes or something.
Yeah. So they point Splinter at a bunch of man bats, and he just, there's this fucking excellent like two, like full page spread, and I think I can show Tyler here. Of Splinter right here in the corner, just taking the fuck out of some man bats. And he's hissing and shit, like he's feral. Like, it's really good.
Yeah, Roz has done that a couple times.
Mm-hmm, yeah. I gotta say, it's not a very complicated story. It's very much just like what happens if the Batman players play around in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles world, which is the opposite of what happened in the first series, was what if the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles play around in Batman's world.
Yeah.
I like it all. It ends so dramatically that I don't even want to, like... I don't even want to spoil it. I showed Tyler earlier, but I don't want to spoil it for the audience. What I do have to say, though, is the art. Freddie Williams II's art is fucking killer. It's all, like, it looks painted, and I want to say it's painted, but I don't want to make that assumption. But he does, he's not afraid to go big. He's not afraid to use the 9 panels that Watchmen uses to tell a story. He's also not afraid to do, like, a massive, like, 2-page spread where just some shit goes off the fucking rails, and it's so dope. There's also a difference in panel layout when Donatello's raged out and telling the story, his panels are like jagged. And I guess the best way to describe it is they're kind of jagged and out of sync. Like, I don't know, like you see how they're like black and stuff?
Oh, yeah. But rough and sketchy looking edges.
There you go, yeah. But when it comes back to people that aren't under the control of Venom, it's very edgy and it's clearly defined. It's reasoned. It's geometrical almost, you know what I mean? So, like, it's cool to see that dichotomy between the panel layout, just to, like, tell you, like, what side of the story is being told right now. I don't know. It's like a little visual cue.
Makes sense.
Also, Freddie Williams is really good at these collage images, where, like, you've got this, Batman's doing this monologue over the course of this page that's, you know, 6 or 7 dialogue boxes long, but over that page is... Bane roided out, Bebop and Rocksteady venomed out, this Foot Clan surrounding the Statue of Liberty, and then this vision of the people of New York subservient to the Venom formula. It's beautiful art. This is the same team of artists that did the Thundercats and He-Man crossover, and obviously the same team that did the first Batman TMNT crossover. I am such a sucker for these that I'm obviously going to read the rest of it. And I think this is definitely a shoe-in or an easy contender for best comic of my year.
Oh, there you go.
Right on, man. That's all I got for interviews, for reviews.
For all the interviews
ever
to talk
happen.
About.
Yeah, thanks, Billy Williams, for being there.
Well, we have a rough third segment that I think you suggested.
Yeah, came up with it on the fly. But so we talked about today... some of the great choices in comic books. One of them is casting Chris Evans as Captain America. The other one being like Deadpool casting everyone that he did into. Everyone
just
that's
having
in
Ryan Reynolds in it.
Sure,
yeah.
But then also there are some terrible choices that have been made. Like Tyler mentioned, Henry Cavill's mustache.
And not just casting, just terrible choices in comic book movies.
Absolutely.
Like, why would you ever do this? Like, not making Henry Cavill shave his goddamn mustache.
That seems like a bad choice.
It was.
But you know what? That was probably driven by cost more than anything.
Yeah, because you couldn't just be like, God damn it, Henry, we won't pay you unless you shave.
Yeah, exactly. So I'd like to take a look at some of the bad choices in comic book movies over the course of the last 40 years, which is because it's coming up on 40 years.
Yeah.
I'm thinking as far back as casting Dolph Lundgren as the Punisher.
Yeah.
That's a bad choice.
Well, what about the Hasselhoff as Nick Fury?
Another one. Yes, like, you just did that because it looks like they kind of fit the physical profile.
Oh, that's the thing is, like, I haven't seen that Hasselhoff Nick Fury, but, I mean, he fits it so well.
He looks like old school Nick
Fury.
I want
to watch that. I'm not going to lie. It probably sucks.
Yeah.
If we're just thinking about casting really quick, let me try to rattle some off here. Ben Affleck.
As
Daredevil.
That's a good one.
Jennifer Garner as Elektra.
That's another bad choice there, brother. and they thought that she could carry her own movie.
Right? Like, making an Elektra movie. Halle Berry as Catwoman.
There's
the
another
Halle
one.
Halle Berry Catwoman movie. Premise, yep. Whole everything about it.
Okay, so do you remember the bad guy's plan in that movie?
I didn't watch it.
Okay. I was working in the movie theater at the time. So, Halle Berry is a low-level worker, performer, or not performer, worker, tech person at a major cosmetics conglomerate. Think it's like Sephora, but like dastardly.
Evil Sephora.
Yeah, exactly. So, the CEO of that, Sharon Stone, has developed, with a couple scientists, has developed a skincare cream that basically, if you use it over the course of your life, like decades, if you use it for decades like Sharon Stone has, your skin becomes pretty much indestructible. But on the other side, if you use it for 1 or 2 years, you become addicted to it. And you have to keep buying it. So that's the bad guy's plot. The good guy's plot is this fucking bumbling idiot that Halle Berry portrays. Ends up getting killed for the knowledge she knows. But before that happens, she goes to this gypsy woman and the cats are all attracted to her. Gypsy woman has like 30 cats. Cats are all attracted to her. Gypsy woman says, oh, the light of the cats is on you. Halle Berry dies. Cats bring her back to life. She now exists as the bumbling oaf Halle Berry and the super hypersexualized Halle Berry.
Oh my God.
To the point where there's a basketball match between Benjamin Bratt and Halle Berry. It's terrible.
No thanks. It's terrible. That bad idea. Horrible idea.
All around, right?
Make a new character. Don't ruin Catwoman.
I
like
think
that.
I have the worst casting of a character ever, and I want to know if I'm right. So Tyler, let me bounce it off you.
Before you say that, let me counter it first with a movie that never happened.
Okay.
Nicolas Cage is Superman.
Okay, yeah. It almost Tim Burton's
almost happened.
Was that Superman Returns? No.
Superman. Oh, fuck.
I'll get it.
Forever?
Yeah, let me see.
No, because there was a Batman Forever. It might have... Damn, I don't remember.
Superman Lives.
Lives, that's Superman what it Lives, was.
That was the one. There's even a trailer for it. Like,
Fake
trailer, yeah. So, my casting call is Topher Grace's Venom. That is a terrible piece of casting right there, folks.
Yes. That is,
terrible.
Notably bad casting.
Yeah, Eric Foreman as Eddie Brock. No.
Very, very bad.
Sorry.
Like, no, he doesn't fit any part of it.
But see, in Spider-Man, Willem Dafoe as Green Goblin? Fucking perfect.
Oh, he's amazing.
Yeah.
So like Alfred Molina?
As Ock?
Dog Ock? Incredible.
Awesome, right?
Fucking even James Franco is incredible.
Yeah, as Harry?
Fucking Tobey Maguire is amazing. They're all amazing except for Topher Grace. He sucks. He's the worst Eddie Brock you could think of.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is. I feel like maybe if he was a little bigger, it would have looked better. Because he nailed the just feeling slighted by
sure.
Peter.
Yeah, but he's also like this slimy little douchebag. Like exactly. Little douchebag. Like this little weasel.
Like, there's no part of his character that's redeeming. Mm-mm. And I feel like that movie would have been so much better had it been a combination of Eddie Brock going a little bit over the line,
mm-hmm.
and Peter being in where he was at the time, taken over by the black suit that he just shut him the fuck down hard. Where, like, if he was a little bit over and Peter went a little too far, that would make sense. But
it's hit on just a little bit.
Yeah, they like you see it a little bit, but really at the end of the day, Eddie Brock was just a sniveling little turd.
Yeah.
And he didn't even seem like Eddie Brock at all. And he just did some shit that was wildly inappropriate, and then we expect to sympathize with him and all?
No. Yeah.
I enjoyed watching him, but he was not a good casting decision.
Although Thomas Hayden Church as Sandman,
oh,
that was a good casting.
Oh, he was
that
so
was,
good.
That was some good work
He should
right
have
there.
Just been the villain of that movie.
Ouch. Yeah, him and maybe Goblin. Like, just put those two in there. That's the A-plot is capturing Sandman. The B-plot is Goblin reconciling his
problem.
Yeah,
we didn't need Venom. And if I remember correctly, Sam Raimi was, like, forced to put Venom in it.
That sucks.
Yeah, like, that was a part of the reason that it sucked, because they forced him to put Venom in it. Studio forced him to have Venom, and he was not about it.
So
and he did what he could, but, you know, he didn't want to do it. His heart wasn't in that.
The last thing I think is worth mentioning about casting-wise is you put Nick Cage as Ghost Rider. So the first Ghost Rider is actually kind of plausible.
I like that movie. It's bad, but I like it.
Until you realize that Nick Cage is playing 20 or 30 when he's actually like 50. So
at that point, I think he was like 40, but yeah.
Still, like they're playing him far too young. It's 2007, sure. By the way. It's 11 years ago. But then you see that they just wanted to get him off the rails in Ghost Rider Spirit of Vengeance.
I never saw that one.
Oh, it's just, it's so bad. It's done by the guys who make Crank. Oh, so some boy. Of the, like, some of the driving shots, like, are dope. They're very visceral, very cerebral. But then there's, like, no plot for the movie. Anyway.
Which is just terrible.
Yeah.
You can use so much with Ghost Rider.
Let's talk about some of the choices character-wise or maybe visual-wise.
We already mentioned a visual, Henry Cavill's mustache.
Yeah. What about Galactus as a Cloud?
Galactus as a Cloud. That's a big mistake that should have been done.
You fucked up right there, guys.
Like, it's so easy to do Galactus. You have the Fantastic Four. They're already ridiculous. You just make him a giant dude.
So.
Make him look more alien. Make his face not human. Or really lean into the canon explanation that Galactus has no set form. Galactus appears, however, whoever's viewing him, he appears like them.
Like Gozer the fucking Traveler or some shit?
Is that what Gozer the Gozerian does?
Yeah. He comes to life as the most feared thing.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's why he's a Stay Puft Marshmallow. Yeah. I thought Gozer was the second movie. No, that was another dude. Never mind.
That is Viggo.
Viggo, that's right. no, Galactus, like, if a Skrull sees Galactus, Galactus looks like a big Skrull.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, like, I think they should have just leaned into that.
I've only ever seen
You could have him a Cloud until he gets down to Earth, and then people start to see him, and then he coalesces into what we see.
So, there's a shot in Rise of the Silver Surfer where Galactus's Cloud is shadowing. It's either going over the moon or going over a landscape. Like, it's covering up a light source.
Yeah.
And you see, just for a split second, the cloud's shadow takes the shape of Galactus's pointed helmet.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's got the straight up and then the angle and then the helmet in the middle. It makes that shape, but then becomes just a cloud again.
Yeah, see, that's just so dumb. It's so much better as a concrete thing instead of just a cloud.
Well, I love the idea of him being tall enough, big enough to put his feet down on the earth and stand up outside of the atmosphere.
Yeah, exactly.
That is such a cool thing.
It's fucking awesome. And again, it's totally ridiculous to film a gigantic man, but just lean into the comic book shit of it. Like, you just mentioned, this is not actually what he looks like. Like, show him on a scanner or something, and what they see through a computer is a weird, crazy cloud. What they see with their eyeballs
is
Galactus.
Yeah.
Like, it helps to put, like, really hammer home his otherworldly nature. He's just above everything. He is the devourer of worlds. He doesn't subscribe to your rules at all. He's there to eat your whole planet.
I do love the Jack Kirby version of Galactus, where he doesn't actually, he actually has the form that he has, and his way to devour planets is this giant, like, anti-monitor style, like, massive.
He's got machinery. He has to turn the planet into a source of energy for
him. And then eats out of that machinery. Yeah. I love that high fantasy sci-fi shit.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's got his home base called Tau 2.
Yeah.
It's this weird, like, crazy angled circle thing. It's a big ass, like, like Dyson sphere size.
Yeah.
Like, home base. It's just this weird, crazy technology. That is awesome. That should have been a major focus, but instead we got a cloud.
So that's
a bad decision.
So I think what that ultimately speaks to is that Hollywood has zero faith in the general audience, but also in the fact that as soon as you implement that this is a comic book movie, people necessarily don't buy into the suspension of disbelief.
Yeah, I don't know why they think people will buy into that, because of course they will.
Because we've seen recently, especially with Deadpool and with Logan or with Guardians of the Galaxy.
Oh, it's just like Guardians.
You embrace the weird and, dude, we'll eat it up.
They're the living planet.
Yeah, exactly. Ego, he's Kurt Russell's face is on the planet.
Yeah, like, it works. It fucking works. And it was so good.
Yeah.
I guess it only took him 10 years after Fantastic Four 2 to realize it, or who knows? That was Fox. Fox will never realize it.
But they did hit they did hit the nail on the head with X-Men 1 and 2.
It's true. They did.
Let's talk about the worst fucking movie of all, X-Men 3.
They missed what made
choice.
Them good.
That is a bad choice right there, is X-Men 3.
Yeah, everything about X-Men 3 was bad. It has one of my biggest problems with big casts is making a big deal out of characters being in the movie and they're there for 3 seconds as cameo appearances.
Or Cyclops dies.
Or Cyclops dying, which went in a really dumb way. Or changing characters.
Like Spike and Omega Red and...
Yeah, like changing what kind of person they are. Okay, so they had a dude who basically was Spike from X-Men Evolution. They called him Kid Omega in the movie. But here's the thing. Nobody ever talked to him and said his name. That's just what
they
he was.
They talked to him. Magneto well, no, talked to
okay,
him.
Okay, sorry. They
stuff,
talked
yeah.
to him, but they don't say his name.
He's actually the guy that played Karnak in the new Inhumans. It's that
yeah,
guy.
He is.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was also in Lost.
He was also in Rush Hour.
Was he?
He's the blonde Chinese guy in Rush Hour.
Oh, weird. I'll have to check that out. Well, so he pops up, and nobody ever says his name, but in the credits, he's credited as Kid Omega. Mm-hmm. Now, here's the fucking problem. Kid Omega is a real character who has completely different powers.
Yep.
You could have just called him Spike. And
that is
a bad decision. That is literally throwing in characters just because you hope somebody's going to show up to the movie because Kid Omega's in the movie.
I'm the Juggernaut, bitch.
I will say I enjoyed that line,
it's a
though.
Fun joke. But ultimately, it takes away from who Juggernaut is.
It does. It definitely does.
Fun joke, though. Fun joke.
Fun joke. Very fun joke.
Especially
if
Vinnie Jones says
it. I will say, I don't think that line was a bad idea. I think having him in the movie only for that line was a bad idea. Like,
agreed.
Like, he could have been used very well. He just wasn't. And that line was there for people who were in on
fans
that,
of the internet.
In on that early meme,
yeah,
which was so fucking good. If anybody doesn't know
what
we're
are
talking
you doing?
About,
Charles is my
look
cane.
Up just YouTube. I'm the Juggernaut, bitch. It's people redubbing the old '90s X-Men cartoon. Fucking fantastic.
So
that is
good
quality comedy. It's amazing. and they got somehow a line from that got so popular it went into a movie. But, you know, it was a bad idea.
Mystique losing her powers.
Oh, God, yeah.
Let's see. What else was in that? Rogue deciding that she's over being a mutant.
Oh, yeah, her story in that was just dumb. No, that and the end of the movie turns out the cure doesn't even work.
Yeah, because Magneto at the end, you see him move the fucking piece.
Yeah, yeah. Just so dumb. Dumb.
Magneto losing his powers.
Angel in that movie. Dumb.
Literally a MacGuffin. Literally yeah. like, no, literally a Deus Ex Machina.
Yeah, like he's yeah. there to like.
Save his dad.
He saves somebody else, doesn't he?
His dad gets pushed off the top of his.
And he flies over and saves him.
Saves his dad.
Like, fucking ridiculous.
So the money shot for him is when he's going to be the first one to receive the cure.
And he busts out the window. Yeah.
Busts out the window shirtless. By the way, horrible loss of Ben Foster, the actor. Misuse.
Yeah, he could have been a very good part.
That guy's such a good actor.
I mean, that's a mistake in the movie. Too many characters that weren't introduced prior.
Sure.
This is I make that caveat because I think Avengers has as many, like Infinity War has as many characters.
Way more.
But we know who they all are. Mm-hmm. The only ones we don't know are the villains. We haven't seen them besides Thanos. So.
Yeah, but Corvus Glaive looks good.
Yeah, they all look fucking good. Ebony Maw looks rad as hell.
Yeah.
I am down with it.
I love that. I think I mentioned it last week, but that fucking tweet that Jonathan Hickman put out. He's
yeah.
like, they gave me shit when it didn't match the movies.
And now the movies are doing his shit.
Yeah.
That's just the way it works.
A couple final things. To be honest, I think that Blade Trinity could have done well without casting Jessica Biel.
Yeah, no, it definitely could have. Because Blade 1 and 2 are fantastic.
Blade 2 is Guillermo del Toro's, like, one of my favorite movies.
Oh, my God. No,
movies.
That movie is so good.
I fucking love
Blade
that movie.
Blade 3 sucks, though.
It does. It's too bad. We've also got... So there are moments of the Thomas Jane Punisher that stand out to me as, like, some of the best Punisher moments. Like, for instance, tricking the guy that's hanging upside down that he's frying his back.
Oh, my God,
with
yeah.
the popsicle. That is awesome.
And brutal kills. If I remember right, he gives John Travolta, it might be a different one of his cronies, but he gives somebody a grenade. And he tells him to hold it, and he pulls the pin.
Yeah.
And he gives this big speech about, like, it's, you know, this many pounds.
It's John Travolta's son. It's one of the
that's
sons.
That's right,
yeah.
His son.
It's a claymore. Yeah.
They can hold that for about 8 minutes.
Yeah.
Like, you do your best and then walks off. Like,
yep.
Damn. It's so good as Punisher.
Yeah, that's John Travolta's, the kid that plays John Travolta's son.
Most of the movie sucks.
Yeah, yeah. So they use the Punisher Max thing to fight with the Russian. That's definitely a big, great part of that movie. But then you got. Your villain is John Travolta. Like, that's your first misstep.
Yeah,
the second
problem.
The second misstep, I think, is I don't remember what it was. I don't remember a second misstep, but I just remember John Travolta.
The second misstep was most of the movie, unfortunately.
I don't know. Him stalking and taking out each member of the Howard family.
Thomas Jane was incredible.
Yeah.
Thomas Jane was amazing. And there were really good parts of it, but like everything else about the movie was not.
I don't know. The whole halfway house that all three of them lived in was good.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I still think.
What about Punisher Warzone? What do you think of that movie?
I never saw it.
Really?
I never saw Warzone.
So Dominic West plays Billy Zane. Or, sorry, Billy Zane. Haha, it's another actor.
Yeah, it is.
he plays Billy the Butcher, like whatever. He plays Jigsaw.
He's Jigsaw.
Yeah. It's actually pretty cool. Like, they open it with him creating Dominic West as Jigsaw, and then the rest of it is him creating a fucking war zone for Punisher to walk through.
Huh.
It's not bad.
Yeah, I kind of want to check it out.
It's Ray Stevenson, so Volstagg, it's him.
Yeah, part of the reason I didn't watch this is because it was just such a different look that I wanted.
There is a parkour bad guy, which is kind of shitty.
I still think John Bernthal is probably the best Punisher we've seen.
Mm.
Like, Thomas Jane, maybe if you gave him more time, could have been better, but as it is, John Bernthal is fucking fantastic. Agreed. That was a good decision.
That was a good decision.
Bad decision,
making Shane live for 2 seasons.
Oh, God, right? Jesus Christ.
Bad decision, Flash is his own villain in season 3 of The Flash. Bad decision, Arrow, all of it.
All of it.
Bad decision, X-Men 4. Bad decision, X-Men 5.
Hold up. First Class was good, and Days of Future Past was
no
good.
First Class was top. I like First Class. Everything else? Nah, I'm good.
Well, agreed.
Apocalypse is wasted.
Apocalypse is garbage. I like Days of Future Past a lot, I will say.
They wasted, what's his name? The guy who plays Poe. They wasted him as Apocalypse.
Oh, Jason Isaacs?
He could have been a way
Oscar
better.
Isaacs.
Oscar Isaacs, yeah.
What? Jason?
Jason Isaac is Malfoy.
Yeah, Malfoy's
Malfoy.
Dad. Yeah. Okay. He's Jason Isaac.
Yeah.
And this is Oscar Isaacs? Or is it Oscar Isaac?
Oscar Isaac? Anyway.
Either way, yeah. Yeah, wasted for sure. I had another good idea for
Parallax. Parallax, bad idea.
Yeah, that was it. I was thinking about Galactus.
Yeah.
Green Lantern as a whole movie, bad. But
pretty
Parallax
much.
In particular.
Yeah. Well, floating head, like Ryan Reynolds' floating head on a CG body.
That was a very bad decision.
Pretty bad idea.
How are you
wasting Mark Strong as Sinestro?
Oh, my God.
Sinestro
right?
had the potential, dude.
Oh,
he
and
was
Mark
there.
Strong was amazing.
He
Mark
was
Strong
there,
was incredible.
But he has 3 scenes.
Yeah. and a fourth at the end of the movie that was wasted and not worth it. Bad.
And then
Tomar Ree, wasted.
Yeah, voiced by Jeffrey Rush, no less.
Just wasted. Oh,
yeah.
Man, those were all
Kilowog.
Bad decisions. Kilowog, wasted.
One of Michael Clark Duncan's
last... Was
Solak
in then?
Huh? Solak? You see him. You see him.
Yeah.
He never interacted. You also see Chip buzzed, and if you look closely, you can see Mogo in the distance.
Ah, garbage. All wasted. There's so many horrible decisions.
We are the core. We are the core. So
oh,
stupid.
My God. There are a lot of bad decisions in comic book movies.
On the other side, though, as I think we've shown tonight, we appreciate those good decisions.
Oh, the good ones are even better for them. You cannot appreciate a sunny day without the rainy ones.
Like, absolutely.
So I guess we got to thank these bad decisions for teaching people how to make good ones.
Yep, even though bad decisions are still made regularly,
all the time.
I.e. the Justice League mustache.
God, right? Like, come on.
It's a 2017 decision there.
Well, Superman didn't need to be a big part of that movie. Come on, just make him shave it for reshoots.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thanks everybody for listening. There will be another Comics Brew next week, and we'll talk to you guys later.
Bye.